On the morning of April 19th, 1775, 8 Massachusetts Minutemen became the first Americans to lose their lives for the cause of liberty. The roads leading from Boston to Lexington and Concord during the overnight hours echoed the hoofbeats of horses carrying riders like Paul Revere on their appointed rounds. The British Army was on the march. Leaving its quarters in Boston, it traveled by boat across the Charles River and began a forced march to seize the leaders of the Sons of Liberty and the arsenal of weapons and powder that the Sons of Liberty had assembled in Concord. Through the night, the British regulars marched, their brilliant scarlet coats muted by the darkness. Out ahead of them, the network of riders sounded the alarm. The British are coming! The British are coming! When the British troops approached the little town of Lexington, the local militia leaders sounded the alarm for the assembling of the Minutemen on the town green. It was not a finely manicured lawn as it is today. It featured at that time taller grasses of varying heights and descriptions. But there, in what we would probably call today weeds, there in the pre-dawn twilight, in the chill of that April morning, the Minutemen took their positions in two lines as the tramping of the British infantry and the shouts of officers became more and more evident. Captain Ferguson of the Minutemen, the commander of this little group, instructed them that they were not to fire their weapons unless fired upon, and then they were to give as good measure as they received. In the midst of the warnings of the British officers that commanded, "Disperse, ye rebels," someone, and to this day no one knows exactly who, someone fired a shot, and at once general firing began. And within just a few moments, 8 of the Minutemen lay dead or dying in the grass of the green. Some died where they fell. At least one was able to crawl to the steps of his house next to the green, where, surrounded by his family, he expired. Later that morning, the Minutemen at Concord inflicted a defeat on the British detachment, killing some of them, and beginning a rout that followed the British Army all the way back to Boston. As those who had been at Lexington during the early morning took positions along the road and from behind trees and rocks fired upon the brilliantly coated British regulars. When the day was over, the improbable had happened. A lightly trained and relatively ill-equipped force of civilians had defeated one of the mightiest armies in the world. But back in Lexington, the high cost of that victory left families there in the throes of grief. For these were not professional military men. They were volunteers. They were farmers for the most part. Eventually, the bodies of those who died that day were buried together near the spot on the green where they fell. And the town raised over their grave an obelisk that stands there to this day that memorialized their names and their sacrifice. The town did so in the hopes that succeeding generations would not forget the price that those men paid in order that their families and descendants would be free. It was for the purpose of remembering. And to this day, those who have the opportunity to go to that place and see that memorial cannot forget those men and the sacrifice they made on that morning. Joshua had a similar goal in mind, or we could say the Lord had a similar goal in mind for Joshua, when Joshua directed that stones from the bed of the Jordan River should be assembled at the river's edge on the western side of the river, so that succeeding generations would not forget how their ancestors had entered the promised land. It's a vivid picture that we have in this chapter, because when all of the people of whom we read in chapter 3 passed over the river, that is, they went through the bottom of the river as on dry ground, that is, it was not muddy, it was not difficult to traverse, but the priests went into the river. And when they did, with the Ark of the Covenant, then the waters of the river stopped from up above that site, and the waters down below drained away, so you had a wide area there for the people to cross. And all the time they were crossing, there were the priests standing there with the Ark upon their shoulders, so that everybody that passed over passed by those priests with that ark. And then all of the people were over, and they were still standing there. And as long as they were standing there, the water of the river was stopped from up above. And while they were standing there, God gave this directive: take stones out of the very place where they're standing and make a monument there, and then take other stones and make a monument on the dry land on the west side of the river, so that the generations to come would remember that their ancestors entered the promised land by means of a miracle. Now, there is a purpose to our observance of Memorial Day that is not far removed. If those stones, as we read in verse 7, were to be for a memorial unto the children of Israel forever, a physical reminder of what God had done, so this weekend we set a reminder to us of what sacrifices God has called forth in order that his purpose for us might be achieved. Now, we have considered this text in Joshua 4 on several occasions in the past, even as recently as last year on the occasion of our anniversary of the church. But we come back to it today because it provides us with the awareness that as with Joshua, so with us, there are compelling reasons for remembrance. Reasons for remembrance. And I want you to think upon that theme with me today. The United States is unusual, certainly unusual, if not unique, in setting aside a day specifically for the purpose of remembering the dead who have served the country in the armed forces, those who are no longer with us. We do not hear their voices or see their faces anymore. We remember them. Some of them died immediately in battle. Soon it will be 71 years since D-Day. That will be a week from tomorrow. And there were many men who died on that day immediately. Some of them didn't even reach the beach before they lost their lives. We have Veterans Day in November, and that is for the purpose of commemorating those who are still living, who have served. And then we have Armed Forces Day, and that is the day for commemorating those who are serving now. So throughout our history, these traditions have developed so that we remember that there is a cost to our liberty. And it is represented in those who have died, in those who have served but who are still living, and in those who are serving now. But Memorial Day compels us to dwell on the sacrifices of those whose voices are silent in terms of anything audible in this world, unless they've been recorded and we can listen to them in that way. We can no longer hear their voices. They have given the last full measure of devotion. I think it's a useful exercise to visit any of the many national cemeteries that exist in our country. We have one here in the Phoenix area. They are literally across the country and literally around the world. Because there you face the reality of that service and how extensive it is. I remember as a boy when we lived in Germany, we went to Luxembourg, and there is a vast American military cemetery there. And I still remember to this day the impression on my young mind of all the rows of white crosses or stars of David and the green grass. And I remember being instructed at that time, this was part of the cost of liberty. Some lost their lives in the first flower of their youth, some without even reaching the age of 20. Others suffered wounds that, while they managed to survive, those wounds left them weakened and affected their health for the rest of their days before they came to die. Still others faced the awful psychological devastation of warfare, what is now known as post-traumatic stress disorder. It did not have that name in the days gone by, but the horrors of warfare certainly were factors in the lives of those who weren't even wounded. But regardless of the impact of military service upon them, today we remember those who now lie beneath the ground in one way or another. We remember them in a particular way. We travel in our mind's eye to those numerous grave markers and other memorials that mark the days of sacrifice. And like succeeding generations coming to that pile of stones, we want to reflect again on their meaning and the reasons for remembrance. There are three such reasons for us to ponder today. First, God's purpose for liberty. God's purpose for liberty. At the end of his life, Joshua admonished the people regarding the temptation to forget the Lord and to deny the Lord. Now, in that last chapter of Joshua, the people promised with a solemn oath that they would never do anything like that. They would not forget the Lord. But of course, ultimately, they did. Ultimately, there arose a generation of people who did not remember Joshua, did not remember the great works that God did in and through Joshua. And those people made the mistake of thinking that what was past had no relevance for them. That should sound familiar. Many people today have the same mindset. What's in the past is not important. When they were not reminded of it, they soon forgot it. So the testimony of those stones was to be a lesson, so that in future generations, if people came along and said, "What are these here for?" then the answer could be given, "This is what they are here for." Anyone who would come to stand by those stones would have to learn about the nature of that memorial. And when they knew that those stones had been brought out of the Jordan River, then they would understand that it took a miracle of tremendous proportions for their ancestors to enter the Promised Land. Think about more than a million people walking through the Jordan River. If it had been just a muddy riverbed, that would have been one of the biggest messes you could have ever imagined. So God, by means of the miracle, not only caused the water to stop, but also dried the riverbed. And they walked through it as though they were walking in the desert. The stones bore testimony to the reality that the Lord's purpose for his people was for their deliverance from their bondage, and to bring them in to the land where they would have liberty. So what did those stones mean? They meant that God sets his people in the paths of liberty. And that is a theme that runs throughout the scriptures, certainly in the New Testament. We read in Galatians chapter 5 the exhortation of the Apostle Paul, "Stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made you free, and be not entangled again in the yoke of bondage." God sets his people in the paths of liberty. Now his people often have feeble resources. They are weak in themselves. But God's purpose is for them to be free. The founders of this nation understood this purpose of God, that they should be free. And that is why, in the Declaration of Independence, this nation set itself to that great truth, that God had given inalienable rights to people, and that among those inalienable, that is, God given rights, not given by the state or by the king, but by God himself. Among those was liberty. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as it was put in the Declaration of Independence. Liberty, then. It was the gift and purpose of God for people to be free. So never accept the idea that liberty is the result of the action of Congress. The action of Congress can do no more than to recognize what God's purpose always is. Now, the greatest testimony to the Lord's purpose for liberty is in the person of his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. He is the Redeemer. He is the deliverer of his people from bondage. He is the great liberator of his people. So Paul could say, stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made you free. God's purpose is for liberty. And here was that which the people of 18th century America, especially in the area of Massachusetts and the surrounding colonies, they understood that this was a right given to them by God. It was really the first time that that truth was articulated in that way. Yet it was certainly the emphasis of the reformers that God had called his people to liberty. So the purpose of God for liberty is the first reason for remembrance. But the second reason is God's power for battle. When we come to Memorial Day, we come to a remembrance of war, conflict, people firing weapons and receiving fire, people suffering the calamity of being hit by artillery shells or hit by musket or rifle fire, or by bombs. The realities of battle are those things that bring suffering. Think about the children of Israel. They got over the Jordan River, and what lay just before them? Close enough that they could see it. It was the city of Jericho, the impressive city of Jericho. The first objective, the first obstacle, if you will, in the campaign of conquest. The people were going to have to fight to take possession of the land that God promised them. Here was the thing that the founders of this country understood. If they were going to establish the declaration that they had made, they were going to have to fight, and there would be many who would never live to see that day established. Some years ago, I visited a churchyard in the Philadelphia area in a little town called St. David's. The town is named for a church. It was in those days an Anglican church, still an Episcopal church, I think, a church that was built in this town. It was built in 1713, so it's over 300 years old, still in use. And I went to visit that place because I knew that some famous people in literature had visited that place, and one of them, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, had even written a poem about it. So I wanted to see it, and in the churchyard, around the building, were graves of soldiers who died in the War for Independence. And you can see their graves still decorated with the flag from the War for Independence, the flag of 13 stripes and then 13 stars in a circle on a field of blue. They declared their independence, but in order to establish it, they had to fight. And some who fought are now buried in that churchyard, and they never lived to see the day when it was established. So the people moving into the promised land were going to have to fight. Those stones that they erected as a memorial bore a testimony to the history of God who had already brought them through battles. They had been engaged in war already in the wilderness, dealing with Sihon, the king of Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, the remnant of the giants. They had fought battles with them. They had fought battles with the Amalekites. And they had faced the great obstacle of the Jordan River. God had sustained them in those battles. And the promise was, and that which was memorialized in those stones, was that God would empower them in their battles of conquest in the promised land. Notice in verse 13 that part of this procession was that 40,000 armed men went over the Jordan. They passed by the Ark of the Covenant. They went over the Jordan and they went unto battle. There was going to be war. And they could not know but that some of them would lose their lives in order to establish the people in the land of promise, in order to establish, if you will, their declaration. They expected to be in battle. There was no surprise about it. So they could look to the memorial, and they could be reminded that the Lord's power would go with them in that campaign. The Lord's power would go with them. And when I think of all the stones, the little memorials that mark the resting places of men who have given all that they could give, they're reminders to us that the Lord was with them. Even if they did not know who the Lord was with them. And the Lord sustained them and blessed their efforts even in days of great suffering, even in days of death. And while they did not always see, they did not live to see the result of what they were doing, God's power was with them. If you read the accounts of the Second World War, particularly the war in the Pacific, it's easy for us to think about the war in the Pacific because we know how it ended. But in the early days of that war, there was one defeat after another. And the forces of the Allies were retreating everywhere. And it appeared that it was certain that on both fronts, both in the Pacific and in Europe, that the outcome of the war was not going to be good. But here was the promise, God would be with them. And not only were they looking to the memorial, but they were looking to the captain whom Joshua met face to face in chapter 5. Verse 14. We read the response of this captain. He said, "Nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord am I now come." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and did worship and said unto him, "What saith my Lord unto his servant?" This was Christ himself who appeared to Joshua in this form. They were looking to him. They knew that he was with them. Now listen, we are battling against the forces of wickedness in our own time, striving against the evil one and all of his devices. So let us look to the memorial. Let us look to the testimony of the sacrifices that others have made in the past for the encouragement that the Lord will empower us for the battles that we face now. Every aspect of the Christian's armor, of which we read in Ephesians, is connected in some way with the power of God for battle. So that is the second reason for remembrance, God's power for battle. But let us come now to the third reason for this remembrance, God's presence for encouragement. God's presence for encouragement. They could look on those stones, that memorial, and they could not doubt the truth that God was with the generation that came through the river. So in later times, the people could confront real obstacles, real difficulties, with the knowledge that God would be with them. Turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 20. 2 Chronicles 20 and verse 17. You shall not need to fight in this battle. Set yourselves, stand ye still, and see the salvation of the Lord with you, O Judah and Jerusalem. Fear not, nor be dismayed. Tomorrow go out against them, for the Lord will be with you. The circumstance was that the opposing army seemed to be overwhelming. They didn't know what to do. So here God said, it will be enough that the Lord will be with you. You're not even going to need to fight. Turn to the prophecy of Haggai, chapter 2. Near the very same passage from which we heard the call to worship today. Haggai, chapter 2, verse 4. In the aftermath of the captivity and the return to Jerusalem. Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, saith the Lord, and be strong, O Joshua, son of Jozadak, the high priest, and be strong, all ye people of the land, saith the Lord, and work, for I am with you, saith the Lord of hosts, according to the word that I covenanted with you when ye came out of Egypt. So my spirit remaineth among you, fear ye not. Here was God saying to the generation that came back from captivity, I am with you. I'm with you in the project of rebuilding the temple and rebuilding the city of Jerusalem. I am with you as I was with you in the day that you came out of Egypt. So stop being afraid. God's presence is with his people. And what was the evidence of his presence on all those occasions? It was that he gave to them all that they needed. It was that he protected them against the rage of all their enemies. So this memorial of which we read in our text was to be a retreat. If there were soldiers who were worn out, cast down, they were to come back, at least in their minds, to the memorial to consider how previous generations felt God's strength for the battle. So it is for us on this Memorial Day. We think of all those graves, and it is an amazing thing to contemplate that at every one of those graves, all over the world, tomorrow, there will be fluttering a little American flag. Think of all those graves, all those testimonials to honor and sacrifice, and understand that those sacrifices, which have all been part of the purpose of God, have enabled us to live in liberty. So we come again today to encourage ourselves that God is with His people, that He will equip them, that He will provide all that they have needed. God's word is sure. Let us draw our encouragement from the memorial today of all that God has accomplished.